It is 22 minutes past the hour on a Transcendent Tuesday morning, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a member of the board at Creation Moments. He is a biochemist and a good friend of the station, and he lives in Garden Valley, Texas, where he picks grapes. It was harvest week last week. How'd it go, Don?
Oh, it went, went fine. Mm-hmm. It was, whenever we have harvest, it's a busy time, but we got the grapes in, got them destemmed and crushed.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next day they were pressed and inoculated with yeast.
How do you destem those? Is it like take a tweezers? What?
Yes, you could do it by hand, mm-hmm. but it takes an awful lot of time.
It would take a little longer. Yeah.
I'm just curious.
There's a machine that has a rotating drum with holes in it and paddles,
mm-hmm.
and the paddles push the grapes to the outside where the drum is, and it basically plucks off the grapes and then crushes it.
That sounds ingenious to me. I don't know if that's the way they did it in old Israel.
No, probably not. No, they didn't. I'm sure they didn't have anything like that. They probably just crushed the whole grapes.
I still think you, being a biochemist, should research the DNA of first century Israeli wine and replicate it, clone it, so that we could taste the same wine that they produced, say, in the Galilee region. I vote for that.
Well.
Yeah,
they may have those grapes. I don't know. I haven't done the history behind it or the research behind it. But those grapes may still be viable in that region. I don't, because they do obviously. Grapes are grown in Israel, mm-hmm. and
they still are. It's a major industry up there. Well, it's interesting. We have a thing going on with Don, in part because, not so much because he raises grapes and makes wine, but because of his background as a biochemist. And we've noted the last couple of weeks that science seems to have taken center stage here for much of the world. I don't know how, I can't speak for other countries around the world. I don't know that they're getting the same kind of news and developments that we are. But my impression is that science is doing its best, but the information we're getting on the results is kind of muddled. You know, do we wear a mask or not? What does the science say? Well, it says it's a great help, and it says it's dangerous, or it doesn't help at all. Or we talk about how many have died in the coronavirus, and I think sometimes we can't even count, because there are people that go for multiple tests, get multiple positives, and they're counted as multiple cases. So are the numbers inflated or deflated or what? Do they mean anything anymore? And then there's the matter of a vaccine. I get the feeling there are hundreds, maybe thousands of companies around the world, certainly in the U.S. there are many, trying to develop a vaccine. It's like a horse race. And I imagine that dollars have a lot to do with this. The first one out with an effective vaccine is going to clean up worldwide. And I think to that end, I just see an article today where Vladimir Putin has announced that the Russian vaccine is all ready for people now, even though it's not completed the so-called phase 3 testing. Clue us in, biochemist Don Clark. What's happening? Is it going to be safe? Is it going to be effective?
Clear it up.
Do we really know what we're talking about here?
Oh, boy, this is a can of worms. This is a can of worms. I mean, normally vaccines take years and years to develop, and here we are trying to develop a vaccine in less than a year. Some steps obviously are being skipped. And then once we have a vaccine, is it going to be safe? According to our previous history in vaccine development, there's a whole controversy around vaccines to begin with. Starting with the Salk, vaccine for polio, that caused all kinds of issues. And it wasn't until years later that we recognized that that vaccine was causing issues, and that there was an impurity in
this
it.
This is the sock vaccine. Yeah, I remember that. I remember getting that on sugar cubes to begin with. In the old days, vaccines or inoculations, is it the same? Are they two different things, two different animals? Because in the old days, and I'm talking late 18th, early 19th century, didn't they used to arrest doctors for inoculating? I mean, it was quite a legal matter, too, back then.
Well, in the old days, What's the purpose of a vaccine? Well, so that your body develops antibodies towards a infectious agent. And in this case, it's the COVID-19 virus. You know, are you going to have immunity? The first question, are you going to have immunity? Does the vaccine even that is being developed going to give you immunity to the virus? Well, maybe, maybe not. It's possible that, the vaccine may work in 50% of the patients, but not in the other 50% for whatever reason. It's very, very complex. And here you're trying to develop basically an immune response to the coronavirus without necessarily giving the patient's coronavirus. I mean, what would be the point if, you know, a patient gets sick as if they had the virus just by giving the vaccine? I mean, but that's happened before.
Does an individual's response to the vaccine depend upon their own DNA, which would make everybody's response a little bit different from everybody else?
Well, their response is directly related to their own personal immune response. Those people who would be less affected by the coronavirus in the first place would have probably a strong, a strong response, because their immune systems are strong enough to handle the virus in the first place. Of course, if you develop a vaccine and you're trying to build up immunities to a particular agent, in this case coronavirus, you would want to give it to the weakest of the population. Well, the weakest is in this case, which we already know, there's many more deaths in the elderly population. So the first people that you would want to try, give the vaccine to would be the elderly, to protect them. But it's exactly the elderly their immune systems are beginning to be suppressed anyway, and they're the ones that are more likely to have a reaction to the vaccine, or putting it another way, they may not even develop immunity to COVID if they get the vaccine.
I noticed that Dr. Fauci today has been, there's an article from, who is this from? This is from Market Watch today. And Dr. Fauci is talking about the likelihood that it will not be 100% effective, much like you're just relating. He says, in fact, the best we can probably hope for is 70 to 75%. In the article, Dr. Fauci had said measles vaccine is the most effective we have at about 97%, flu vaccine 50 to 60%. And I have a question about this, too, because I'm old. Flu vaccine is about 50 to 60% effective for healthy adults who are between 18 and 64. So there, is he saying it's less effective over the age of 64, and that because of a now basically dying off immune response in older people?
Yes. I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying. If you're if you don't have a very vigorous immune response, then it doesn't matter whether it's COVID or the vaccine for COVID, you're not going to have very much a response to it, to any vaccine, you need your immune system in order to build up antibodies towards any infecting agent. And if your immune system is weak, you're going to get a weak response, which may not protect you from actually getting the virus.
And suggest that perhaps the vaccine would do more harm than good.
And may do more harm. Okay, so you've got, depends on how they're developing this vaccine. There's some indication that they're using aborted children, tissue from aborted children, to actually develop the vaccine.
In this country? I thought that was illegal.
Well, you can... It's not clear from the article whether it's this country or around the world. Whether it's illegal or not doesn't necessarily mean they're not using it, because they are, even in this country, they're still selling you know, body parts from aborted babies.
By the way, if anybody's interested in following along in this article, there's a link in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. You can click on it here, and the article talks about some of the reservations we should have about the work on vaccines happening right now, whether it's in this country or elsewhere in the world. Don, is if the vaccine may or may not be effective, I'm concerned that money will be the determinant here as to, you know, who gets the contract, who gets to the seal of approval, the official seal of approval by, I don't know, the CDC or the FDA or whoever has to do that. And in the end, it's about dollars. Is that grounded in reality?
Oh, it's very much grounded in reality, because here the government has already poured in, a lot of money into the companies that make vaccines, and even, you know, new companies. So we're already giving them a lot of money just to develop this vaccine, and we will probably skip steps along the way. Like, one of the steps for developing a vaccine is you test it in animals. See if you have any side effects. See if the animal actually develops antibodies towards the agent that you're injecting into the animal. And if so, well, that's, you know, if it's having an immune response, then okay, maybe it'll have an immune response in humans as well. So the normal clinical trial is you first do animal testing. Then after you've done animal testing, then you do phase one, what's called phase one clinical trials. This is with any drug or any agent that's going to be administered to humans. Then you do phase one clinical trials, which is a safety trial. It's just a safety trial to see whether or not what the potential side effects are from whatever you're injecting in this case, or if it's a drug, then the drug administration. Then if it passes that, then you go on to phase two trials, which are typically a dose response curve. You're trying to figure out, well, how much do I need to dose various people in order to get the response that I'm looking for? In this case, it would be how much of the antigen, the agent that causes the immune response, how much of that do I need to give a person in order to get the appropriate immune response that I'm looking for? And so that takes a number of population, a number of people in order to test. And then once you figure out, okay, this is my optimal dose. I don't get too many side effects from this dose, but yet it's high enough to elicit immune response in most people. Then you go on to phase three trials, and you say, okay, is this working in a larger population? And in larger population would mean people of various age groups, as well as having various diseases, for example, like cardiovascular disease or asthma or whatever. And then you can get both a safety profile and an efficacy profile in that group.
So you would look for volunteers across several categories of people, age ranges, gender, ethnic background, perhaps health conditions.
In this case, you better, because you're the intention is to administer it to all of the population. Mm-hmm. You're not leaving out anybody. So in that case, even school age kids, young kids, if you don't test in young kids, how do you know what the results in young kids are going to be? Before you administer this to millions and millions of people. So are they doing those testings? I have no idea. You know, does anybody know? The information is not coming out as far as I can see. So how are we going to determine whether or not what is being administered or is one safe and the other is it effective, and how effective is it or how safe is it? Can you give us a safety profile for this? How many people have what side effects? And if that information is not made available, personally, I would be very reluctant to take any drug, much less a vaccine, which you're messing with the, you know, at best, you're only messing with the immune system and trying to elicit immune response. At worst, you're actually modifying RNA and DNA of the patient, of the person.
Wait a second. The vaccine will change your DNA?
There are some vaccines that modify RNA and DNA.
Now, can it grow hair?
Well,
do you need some?
But that's a major concern because you know you have to start modifying the RNA and the DNA in order to elicit an immune response or in order for your body to somehow recognize the COVID as an invading agent is a very dangerous thing because what is that modification doing? And is it a positive thing or does it have long-term effects? Some modifications, they may modify, for example, you may have some latent, everybody has latent rogue cells in their body and their immune system usually takes care of it. If the immune system doesn't take care of those rogue cells, it turns into cancer and then you've got an issue. Well, if this vaccine, for example, if a vaccine modifies the DNA and actually promotes these rogue cells or produces more rogue cells, then you're going to have people that are now coming down with certain types of cancers that they didn't have before. And how long is that going to take to determine whether or not a person is developing or a group of people are developing cancers of a certain type that came from the administration of the vaccine? That could take years and years. By that time, by the way, the pharmaceutical companies or the vaccine companies have made their money, and you then become the guinea pigs, and at the expense, of your potential shortening of your life in order to get this vaccine out in the market. Because after all, you know, we've got all these people dying from the coronavirus, so we need to do something right now. We need to do it fast. And
But how do you manage the risk? You can't. No vaccine is going to eliminate the risk. There was always going to be some risk to be managed. You have some highly pertinent experience in this. You worked in pharmaceuticals for years, and then you left. So I ask you this: Does business trump science, or vice versa, or is it more complex than that?
Well, in this case, it's very complex because you have the fear factor that the media and the government, certain aspects of the government, have been propagating on on people since the start of this. It appears that this virus is maybe a little more deadly than a flu virus, but not to the extent that they were originally projecting. They were originally projecting, 2 million people in the United States would die from this virus. Well, it's nowhere near that. The death rates, they were saying, oh, it's going to be 4% or 5% or 6%. And, we're down at 1% approximately that we know of today. And the more people that get tested, the lower that number gets. So it could be at the end of the day that this virus is no more lethal than your standard flu virus that comes around. And we've taken all these precautions and we're developing we're developing a vaccine for it at a rapid rate of time. For what purpose?
Current rate in the world is 0.25%.
0.25%.
It's an incredibly low number.
You're at the level of a normal flu virus.
It's even lower, yeah.
Yeah, so what's the big deal? What's the big deal?
Exactly.
And then for the government to come, potentially come and say, you must immunize your children with this vaccine so that they could go to school. I mean, this is outrageous. I mean, you know, forget about the science. It's the politics of this whole thing.
You know, in this country, that would prompt a revolution. There would be, it would be tough to enforce that. But in the rest of the world, I'm not so sure.
Well, it depends on the country, because there's actually part of this article has back in March of 2020, I'm not finding
World Health moment. Organization we're talking about here.
Yeah, well, the World Health Organization forced upon Kenya a vaccine for tetanus, to eradicate tetanus.
It was in 2014, yeah, I'm seeing it.
Yeah,
here.
2014, it's a little bit further down in the article. It says, so in 2014, Kenya, well, there was a Catholic bishop who questioned the vaccination program and linked it, it was causing problems within the population. And the problem that it was causing, it was sterilizing the women.
Wow.
So here's the World Health Organization that's supposed to be protecting the world, right, in developing things to help. But do they have an underground sterilization program that, you know, for certain populations of the world that and we're saying, oh, you know, this is, you know, we're trying to eradicate tetanus around the world. But what they're doing subvertly, apparently, whether they knew it or not, and they, you know, it's hard not to suggest that they didn't know it, was to actually sterilize these folks and sterilize the population. I mean, that's horrible. That's a horrible thing to do. So how do we know that something as evil would not be implanted in this vaccine that they're telling, you know, telling us, oh, this is good. You shouldn't have any worries. Yes, it took us only 6 months, 8 months to develop that vaccine, but that's because we mobilized and we, you know, had a group effort. We took a shotgun approach in order to develop it. And then, you know, it comes down to that there's some horrible side effects that, oops, we're sorry, but it's too late. You know, it would be too late by that time because you've immunized millions and millions of people. And whatever the side effects are, you know, those people who took the vaccine have to live with it. At what expense to the government or to the you know, pharmaceutical companies that developed it? None.
Okay, you know? Well, pardon my cynicism here, but the safest course of action for we individuals might be to wait and wait and wait, because one, if the vaccine is effective, that means that not even having been vaccinated will be safer out in public because all those other people are now immune and not getting it. And we can wait and see what side effects are for weeks or months or a year. What do you recommend? What's the best course of action for an individual when this vaccine or vaccines finally are ready for distribution?
Take a deep breath and stop panicking. That's a good beginning.
Right. I mean, there's other treatments for the virus now, even though the government, not necessarily the government, but the social media is certainly blocking any indication of successful treatments that are cheap, that, you know, help the survival rate even more.
Hydroxychloroquine and other drugs that have also been bandied about, backed and beaten up, and their flag has been flown, and I don't even know what the science is on that stuff anymore, because there's no definitive answer out there, maybe thanks to media mainly.
Yeah, well, the answers are out there. I mean, yes, you don't have a placebo-controlled trial, but with, you know, in hundreds of patients, but you're not going to have a placebo-controlled trial for this. You know, it's the you're just going to be forced to take it without the proper science behind this. So in one case, they're telling you, oh, we need the proper science in order to make a determination on a safe drug that has been used for 70 years, whereas on a vaccine, we don't need that same rigor of science, same rigor of clinical trials. But it's okay because we're telling you it's okay. I don't think so. I am going to wait. Every individual needs to make up their own mind on this. In some areas, they may not have a choice because, like I said, they may tell your children or your grandchildren, for example, in order for you to go to school, you need to take the vaccine. And then we need to test to see whether or not the vaccine was effective because we'll give you an antibody test. And if you develop antibodies to the virus, then, oh, good, you're good. You may come into the classroom now. That's a big issue in itself. And, state governments will have to take this up individually. But it's the people who must respond to whatever the state government decides and look at this and say, wait a minute, this has been developed too fast and perhaps we should put the brakes on all of this.
Except that there are lots of people crying for a national plan, that is a federal government mandate for this or that or a federal government ruling requirement for this or that, as opposed to letting the states adapt to their local situation. And that may depend, whether or not that happens, may depend upon the election this fall. So politics invariably enters into it, too. I think maybe the best defense is, self-defense than common sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, but if you can't get the information, if they don't give you the information on the safety and efficacy of this, that in itself is a red flag.
That's something that we need to deal with, each of us individually, and keeping in touch with the legislators and talking to people and getting out there and just being aware, I think. Self-defense, the best defense. Dr. Don Clark, member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website to you. It's creationmoments.com. There you'll find a wealth of information about scientific information about the biblical creation story. And also want to recommend your visit to BrokenRoadRadio.com. Check on that article link in the chat window. You'll find that very informative Bob Marshall article that's dated August 4th of this year. Don Clark, thank you very much. It's a joy to talk to you and a pleasure to have you. And sorry about that wound on your head that you got during the harvest there. Those grapes are... I didn't know that being a vintner was so dangerous.
Oh, man. It's being a farmer. You get all this equipment, and you got to keep an eye out for it because it can attack you.
Well, we plan on you being around next week too, so we'll talk to you then. Watch your step there, you farmer.
Right.
Farmer, you.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Thank you so much.